Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
The beaches are crowded every night. From Penobscot to
Augustine,
all the boys are feeling
Augustine,
and the girls
ain't even putting up a fight.
Because it's you.
Because it's June. June. Just because it's June. June. It's busting out all over. Yeah, we had to give you a show tune because it's Gay Pride Month. Hi, I'm Bobby Rivers, and thank you for listening to Mocha. Mocha, M-O-C-H-A-A, stands for Man of a Certain You and Age, which is what I am, and which is what the inimitable, the totally remarkable Keith Price is. Okay, I promise I will not sing again in this show. How are you?
I'm good. Every time I hear that song, I just think about poor Leslie Uggams.
Poor Leslie Uggams. And you know, if you're on Twitter, if you follow Playbill, Playbill put up the clip of Leslie Uggams doing that song so that when people like Keith and I refer to it, you can actually go and see what we're talking about.
You know what? You know, I'm going to have to like make a hyperlink in the description down below so that when they come to click on the episode, it'll be there. Because you know how people don't like to look for nothing.
we love Leslie Uggams, and Lord, I'm hoping she has points in Deadpool. Because if she does, she is going to the bank.
She better, because she only had two scenes in the movie, but I digress.
But you know what? But
that's all you need.
Look what a big... How many people now, I mentioned this before, young people that I know, young folks, the youngins, in their 20s and 30s were saying, that black woman who played Blind Al is so cool. And I went, okay, I got to check out who this black woman is. I went, it's Leslie Uggams. Oh, my Lord. So proud of her. A groundbreaking African-American talent of TV, film, and Broadway.
History.
Yes, yes. She's history.
She's living history right now.
She is living history. Listen, we like to talk about living history in theater and tell you what's going on in just... Everything. We talk about all sorts, everything, social issues. I have to bring something up, something that happened in the White House.
Uh-oh.
Why was Kim Kardashian in the Oval Office? Why?
Because
why?
It's the end of days, Bobby. Because
that is the only accurate answer.
Because if you've ever seen that movie Idiocracy, I don't know about you, but this is kind of how that started.
Okay, first of all, folks, if you have never seen the movie Idiocracy, you need to.
Yes.
That was a movie that was shelved because so many businesses mentioned in it got irritated. Mm. The movie was shelved, but watch Idiocracy because it's come true.
Well, I think, you know, ultimately now that I know that history, because I didn't know that it had gotten shelved. I just thought it was one of those that kind of came out and nobody thought about talking about
it. No. It was shelved because people like, I guess, like Starbucks and Jiffy Lube got upset because, it, you know, 500 years from now in the future, all Jiffy Lubes are now hospitals.
I mean, it's like, it is sadly... oddly prophetic in a bizarre, crazy kind of way.
It really is.
And it's sort of like it was a precautionary tale that they didn't want anybody to know because this might have been the plan all along, Bob.
All along. There two people wind up in the future. One is an army guy who was a total lame brain, but in the future, he's a genius.
Right.
And he's with Maya Rudolph as a hooker. Maya Rudolph is the most conservatively dressed hooker you have ever seen. She's practically wearing culottes. And that's what breaks me up.
Because you know who her mother was. Yeah. Yes. She's not going to ever embarrass her mama.
And these two are geniuses.
And wow. But I mean,
genius 500 years in the future.
And that is what is so creepy.
And you look at that movie and then go back and look at the photo of Kim Kardashian and Trump in the Oval Office where she had a meeting. What was she talking about, prison reform?
Oh, like, really?
I mean,
sort of like, it seems so random.
You have held America hostage with your reality show for years, and you are talking about prison reform. If it helps someone, that's a good thing. But
wait, I just realized, Mabula, because, you know, she was a victim of a crime herself when they stole all her jewelry when she was in France. Maybe she had some sort of, like, you know...
What? Okay, so that's another thing. And God bless her, I'm so glad she wasn't harmed. But the fact that she wears all this expensive jewelry and then she goes online showing you, hi, here's everything I have. And then it gets stolen. You know, her life was like a movie called The Earrings of Madame Duh. How can you not expect that somebody's going to get the idea of ripping you off?
Lord have mercy. Again, but like you said, that picture alone is one of the most frighteningly prophetic moments ever. And it's sort of like, it seems as if we look at that picture and don't do anything else about the direction that our country and our government is moving, then we are really sad. Because, come on.
He has yet to apologize to the Central Park Five.
That could have gone to their graves. Thank you. Innocent. So
innocent. Five black and Latino men unjustly accused of a crime they did not commit.
And it was, you know, again, he was one of the spearheading people talking all the smack during the time about, you know, getting them arrested.
He made the front page. They should be executed.
You know? So, again... For That's those what, of us from this area of town, exactly.
They should be executed. He wanted the death penalty,
you know,
for these five black and Latino teenagers, who were later found to be innocent. If you've never seen the documentary, The Central Park Five by Ken Burns, put it on your must-see list. Mm-hmm. It's riveting.
You know,
the whole story is there.
And it's like, again, you know, that was the history that was available because Ken Burns, you know, found lots of footage. So it's like, you know, it wasn't like as if it was happening and nobody knew. And here we are when we see him moving up and ascending towards this level of becoming the president. And nobody wants to talk about any of that stuff. And I'm like, how is that even possible? You know what I mean? How does somebody with a bankruptcy history like him become president? How do you not show your income taxes? How do you,
there is this wonderful chef, nothing. There is this wonderful chef. His first name was Jose. I cannot remember his last name right now. He was recently featured on CBS 60 Minutes, who has been in Puerto Rico for months, cooking, helping these people, you know, helping the fellow Puerto Ricans who are our fellow Americans, helping to make the situation better. Now, that's somebody he should be meeting with in the Oval Office also, you know. He should be in the Oval Office talking to Trump and saying, this is the help that we need.
But here's what I'm thinking.
You know, I'm glad Kim got her photo op. You know, bless her heart.
The idea now that we're now trying to look at Kim Kardashian as a serious human being who's focused on more social concerns. I'm sorry. So I guess it's now since you become a mother that your viewpoint in life has changed. Okay. If this is how we're going to rationalize it now, but it's like, again, I'm sure that at some point in time, you know, there were lots of newspapers with lots of people's faces, lots of people being unjustly accused of things and stuff like that, that you never thought once about thinking about helping. And now they're saying that because she now has decided that, you know, her other part of her life is just so boring and now she's focusing on something new and something real. And I'm just like, okay, thank you. But, you know, write a check. Write a check.
I wish Joe what awareness was are you going to bring about all this.
What awareness are you going to bring to the conversation of prison reform? And people are going to go, you know, I'm going to take it very seriously because, you know, she had a meeting with Donald Trump to talk about. And I'm thinking, really?
Exactly.
Like, that just stops the sentence. You had a meeting with Donald Trump to talk about prison reform, and there should be nothing else that comes out of it because, really? The man really? Who pardoned Joe Arapio? Really?
Really?
Who devised that conversation? Who planned that photo op? And it's like, is this an attempt to, like, you know, get race relations under control because he's talking to Kim Kardashian and he's friends with that weird, crazy Kanye West? So bless his, I'm like,
bless his heart, but
bless the whole
my Lord. It made my head hurt. Okay, let's move on to another topic. Have you seen this new reboot of Queer Eye?
No, I have not. And I personally have chosen to not even engage. I'm sorry, Bobby Lee. I didn't know you were going to talk about it, but this is what happened.
What happened?
I can't be marginalized one more season. I just can't do it.
Well, this will, because I bring this up because it will lead into our next topic. Now, I watched a couple of the first episodes, and I only watched on Netflix because it got so much publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people on Twitter were like, oh, you must see it, you must see it. And then the guys were honored at GLAAD, another GLAAD event, you know, which I guess I'm not surprised at. So I watched the first two episodes, and it's okay, but it's still a show that is driven by retail. It's all, you know, it's all about shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Get this. I guess the difference is now there is a black guy in the quintet.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, in the first one that was on NBC years ago, there one of the guys was black, and he was at the first two or three episodes, and then all of a sudden he was gone.
Oh, Babalu.
Yes.
This is your lucky day, darling. Go ahead and finish your thought, and then I will catch right up behind you, baby.
Okay.
Because you got... I'm going to flip you out right now when you do it. Go ahead, baby.
Okay. So, I watched the original Queer Eye, you know, with Carson Kressley.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, you know, it's funny because he's doing the kind of lines that I had done on local WNBC News and they always threatened to fire me for, but Carson's getting paid big money to do them now. Okay. So then I watched
Bobby,
the reboot.
And Bobby, you ran out of coins. Remember last episode? You ran out of the coins.
I'm sorry. I was proud of that line. I thought Mel Brooks would have liked that line. Did the previous podcast. So I'm watching this one, and the guys are nice, but here's what wears me out. I get in this one, I get the feeling that I got from the first one, that the director says, okay, when you guys are riding in the car, I need you to be queenier and chattier and flap your hands around like you're auditioning for Children of a Lesser God. Because it's just like, oh, okay, we get it. That's my feeling. I get it, you're gay. But kind of, can you dial it down a little bit? A little bit.
It's like we don't live in the world where you have to work that hard now.
Exactly.
Sean Hayes has made it possible for all of us to calm the f*** down now.
Oh, please, because I thought, look, I'm gay, and if I was in the car with those queens, I would go Lady Bird. I would just open up the car door and hurl myself out onto the highway.
Come on. Let's just face it. That would be like, I'm a gene making that leap.
Oh, God.
From Paper Moon, just jump right out
moon.
The car.
Yeah. That's what I would be in the back seat. Tell about that. Tell about the time that Matt kind of hit it with a beer bottle, Miss Trixie.
I'm glad you brought that up because I have my own story about the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, but this is how you're going to gag. So you remember how you were just talking about the Queer Eye and how they had a guy on there was a black guy that was on the first like two or three episodes and then he just disappeared.
Right. That was on the NBC version.
His name was Blair. something. It was no, this is when they were on Bravo. Remember, because this was the Bravo.
Oh, that's right. So right, Bravo, and then it went to NBC.
And then because it's under NBC, but yes. And right, so he was on the episode for like 2 or 3 episodes, right? And then they disappeared. So when the story broke that this guy, his name was Blair, I couldn't remember his last name. There was a Metro Source magazine article or something that was around. I can't remember. It was one of the rags that you can find when you're in the city. And the front cover basically called it the Blair Bitch Problem. Okay.
Oh,
so now, you see Keith Price sees this. The next day, Keith is going to do an interview on this radio show, The Joey Reynolds Show, back on AM radio once. AM 710 when he was on WOR.
Right, yeah. So it must have been like 2 in the morning.
2 in the morning, because, right? He was on 2
that's
in the morning.
What Joey was always on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Keith Price comes strutting in at 2 in the morning, and who does he see sitting in the studio as well? It's Blair from the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy controversy and his lawyer, right? Right. So I'm sitting there like, ooh, this is going to be dishy, right? I walk into the room, and do you know he was so shady to me? The queen was shady to me, right? So then as the story unfolds about what's happening, you know, he was like trying to, when he walked in the room, there was like sushi and stuff being handed down on the table.
Right.
And, you know, he was like, you know, getting his sushi off the thing, and I talked to him, and I was like, so, you know, so what's your story? Where are you from? Turns out he's from Texas. He's got this affected accent. And I said something about going to the University of Texas at Austin, and he said that he went to some place in Switzerland, some school in Switzerland.
No, oh, Lord.
And so I was looking at this. No, this, and I was like, oh, that's fabulous. That's wonderful. And in the back of my mind, I thought of that awful, terrible, terrible, terrible racist joke that people used to say that, you know, and in this case it was, what do you call a black guy from Texas who goes to a boarding school in Texas?
What?
The N-word. Because, let me tell you, he was so pretentious and he was so nasty in that little interaction that I had with him, right? So then as they start telling the story about what had happened and how he was on the show and then, you know, somehow this is like, and then I thought about it and I was like, okay, we know Carson Kressley. We know Cayenne. I remember meeting Ted, and I forget the other guy. And
I used to see them in Chelsea. Hanging around and before the show hit the air.
And they were very formidable queens in their own retrospect.
Yes.
And this young man got on the show and tried to be a fierce queen, because you can just tell. I could tell right away after my 5 seconds with him what he must have been like when he walked into the room with all of those queens. And he made the mistake of forgetting.
Yes.
He made the mistake of forgetting.
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Yes, honey. Because they sure enough got rid of you, Toot Sweet. And because I am sure he rubbed one or two, if not all of those queens the wrong way, He probably shaded out with one of them, caught a producer on the bad side of the day, and they were like, why are we dealing with this? And they let him go, and that's how Jay Rodriguez wound up becoming the culture expert.
And, oh, gosh.
Yes, and I gagged because I was like, I walked away from that whole little time with him in that studio, and I was like, well, no wonder they got rid of you, because you ain't nice. It's like, and then it's like, and this was long before I started doing radio at Sirius. And I was like, and I knew then, it was like, even as the gay black man in that scenario where you're supposed to be just as equal as those other queens that are on that show with you, you pop off in the wrong way, and one of those producers who don't like you or didn't want to sleep with you or had to hire you because he didn't feel like being bothered with nobody, that's the one that's going to wind up, you know, firing
exactly.
you and then exactly. making it look like you are that problem. And that's exactly what happened to her. So it was so funny when you said it. And that's why when the new sequel came out, I was just like, I don't need to relive any of this. Like, I can't help make straight people beautiful anymore. Or you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to sit here and be that person, that gay person for someone. I can't do that. That's not what I do, and that's not who I am, and I'm glad that they're there. It's a shame that that's all people seem to want from us as generally a community, besides the entertainment factor. So,
can we do something other than give you a beauty makeover and redecorate your house?
And redecorate your house. And help you with
can we, like, fix a
stubble.
Jeep?
help you clean up your skin, you filthy pig. You know, like, I don't have time to do that for nobody because I barely can do it for me.
Look at our cases. Look at you and me. We want showbiz work again. Mm-hmm. I was just recently offered a job.
Doing?
A print job. But it was another in the long, long line of TV, radio, and job, TV, radio, and print job offers I've received, which ended in the words, but we can't pay you anything. I just got this one last week.
So how is that helpful to me?
Because I got it last week, but I can't pay you anything. Now, the only work that I am offered in which people pay me is to be a dog walker.
Hello.
Hello.
Shout out Greta and Xander. Anyway, so little babies. Oh. They do keep a brother occupado. I'm just saying. You know,
on TV, we're all like beauty makeovers and fashion makeovers and redoing your apartment.
Shit, I ain't got time for all of that.
And I, you know, I am proud to be gay. I'm glad, you know, God bless those men who've got those gigs, but we do not, do we really need to see another queen leaping like a gazelle over your front lawn to give you a spice rack?
Because why not? Because why the flop not? There lies the issue. I mean, how are we going to combat that kind of stuff if that's what people want? I mean, we got Kim Kardashian and Donald Trump in the White House.
A minor point that I thought of one of the first episodes of the rebooted Queer Eye. Mm-hmm. Well, the guy that they were giving a makeover to was you would call him a good old boy down south, mm-hmm. Probably 50s, maybe early 60s, a portly gentleman, mm-hmm. with a scraggly beard and a need of a haircut, you know, who just said he never had really
What's
known
his
any
name
openly.
Stuart. No, I'm just kidding.
He'd never known any openly gay men, so he was really, you know, really mm-hmm. wanted to see. Meet these guys. Well, it turned out it was a nice episode, and they cleaned him up, and the makeover was nice. But here's the fact, like I said, that guy had a pretty big sizable gut on him. Mm-hmm. And he had a little health issue that affected his skin, so they dealt with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they give him nice clothes. But it's all five slim young guys. You're a good-looking man.
We don't want to date you.
Which is bringing me to my point. Do you know, because I have been solo for like 20 years now, and one of the reasons why I've been rejected is because guys say I just wasn't looking hot enough. And I thought, you know, if that man was gay and was seated, you know, at the bar and caught on fire, no one would pick up the seltzer gun to put him out. But
maybe the bartender would, only because it was messing with his tips.
But as a straight man, the gay guys are saying, mm-hmm. you're a good-looking male.
Yeah. For some sad woman who really needs you. That's the part they cut out. I'm just...
And he got it. And he had a date by the end of the episode. But why can't they treat older gay men the same like way. That?
And that's the thing. You know, and again, we... Between those folks doing that, and I got it, you know, it seems like it's a periodic moment with this particular personality. But, you know, Andy Cohen now doing another season of The Love Connection, helping his girlfriends find guys and guys find girls, because that's what he does. He's so, like, inclusive. I'm like,
let me tell you. He gets on my nerves. And you know why? It's like, can you give us a classy black woman like a Leontine Price? You know, or you know what I mean? And Grace Bumbry. You know what? Do we need another sister giving us chicken neck? No, Andy Cohen.
He won't be doing that, darling. He's busy. He's going to have to leave that to other people to make those decisions.
And can he help a gay brother out? Does he do anything for gay black men? Oh, there's the answer right there.
See. I'm only speaking from my own personal experience, and that's only because I can say that I have met him and dealt with him on several moments. He's been, you know, extremely pleasant to me. He hasn't been unpleasant, but, you know, one of the things about his energy and personality style is that that's kind of where and what people want their gay people to be, for the most part. And so, and when I say that, I mean in the popular culture arena, that's kind of the only space that's still co-opted for them. And it's kind of like, if you watch, I've been watching a lot of daytime television lately, and I know that that's set. Hello, Bobby, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I sure can.
I've been watching a lot of daytime television lately, and every time when you and I, we have those moments, like if I get to the Good Morning America before you for some reason, and I'll be sending you this notes like, ooh, Lord, how little time we're spending actually working, and yet at the same time promoting 5-minute promos of your show, Laura Spencer.
Exactly.
I'm trying not to come for you, Laura Spencer, but dang, girl. You don't do nothing. And then she does it for the concert moments when they were like cool concerts. Like, oh my God. It's like,
because, you know, in case you folks don't know what we're talking about, if you watch Good Morning America, and we have studied this, we have timed it. Chris Spencer is the only anchor on the show who only works 1 hour of that 2-hour show.
If that.
And she's in the promos. But here's the deal. She comes on. She reads 3 items called pop news that you could have read the day before on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
And then she does the bargain segments.
The bargain segments.
And then she plugs her rub-it sale show. Mm-hmm.
And then, meanwhile, you and me, we sweat and strain, bodies all aching and racked with pain, trying to get a gig.
Don't that barge.
Let that mail.
But I'm still right now that we're going to talk about gay folks and images and stuff like that, and we're going to talk about the fact that the Queer Eye, the new Queer Eye, has gone on to get this new accolade from the GLAAD people.
And here how I want to slide into the next topic.
You know?
The rebooted Queer Eye has been honored by GLAAD, and GLAAD should have honored Hap and Leonard.
Wait, I'm going to put some slow gospel music up underneath this moment because I'm very angry right now. I need Jesus. Go ahead, baby.
Joe Lansdale wrote books that gave us one of the best TV series I had seen in years. Hap and Leonard. By the way, today is Sunday, June 3rd. Happy birthday, James Purefoy.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And Hap and Leonard, for you folks who followed it, you probably are as disappointed as Keith and I are because the show did not get renewed. It, you know, it's done. We had 3 seasons, 3 great seasons. Some of the best acting, the best writing, the best directing I'd seen on a series. What happened, Leonard? These two, TV, okay, first of all, rarely, does entertainment give us a couple? Mm-hmm. Show us 2 men who are best friends.
Yep.
And one of the men is straight and the other is openly gay. When they give us that, it's usually in a comedy. Like the sitcom that ABC had called Happy Endings.
Mm-hmm.
And then to a degree, James Garner and Alex Karras in the movie Victor Victoria.
Which I love.
This was a... was a drama series.
I'm sorry.
Like a crime thriller, like country noir.
It was fantastic.
Fantastic. But it also, what it showed us about class and race and family.
Especially
and
this last season. This last, that third season.
Especially this last season. Mm. Where you had the white guy, the pacifist, Hap, and he was a conscientious objector, didn't serve in Vietnam. And Leonard, black, openly gay, Republican, served in Vietnam, and he is a tough mother, you know what. Nobody misses, and out gay. And how you follow them and, you know, in their journey through life, and like I said before, these statements on class and race and family and gender expectations, all of that, brilliant writing. Mm-hmm. And the series took place in the 1980s.
Right.
Michael Kenneth Williams.
Shout out,
playing
Marco.
Shout out. His third time playing a gay black male. He did it on The Wire. He did it in an ABC TV miniseries called When We Rise, mm-hmm. which is a biographical miniseries about the start of the LGBT movement in San Francisco. He played Ken Jones, who was in the Navy and then became an LGBT activist. And here he is playing Leonard. Excellent. Excellent. And I went, okay. Glad, honored, Queer Eye, and once again ignored Michael Kenneth Williams.
All right. As you've been sitting here talking, and I've had all this time to process, because honestly, I had been grieving a little bit, and I was very upset when I got the news. I tweeted that we need to sit Shiva.
Oh,
we have major things to do, which major. We're gonna. But you know, because Douglas Griffin and somebody else,
and I would be dressed exactly like Golda in the movie Fiddler on the Roof.
Perfect, perfect. But here's the thing. I realize now. Because I just as you were talking about the third season, I started having flashes of the finale in my head. And I started having flashes of what was happening in that Two Bear Mambo as we were getting to that finale. And what I feel now, and you're going to laugh when I say this to you, Bobby Rivers, and all of y'all that's laughing, y'all going to be laughing and thinking Kiki is crazy. But this is what I just realized. Do you remember that? There were like three really powerful, powerful scenes in that show, one of which was when that racist sheriff bitch woman
is in
Leonard's house, honey, and tried it with him, honey, and that's great. He was like, not in my house. And up until then, this woman has been working in cahoots. You know, this is what you find in the story, has been in cahoots with this, you know, white supremacist kind of group that's going on in this town.
Right, right.
And so when they get to that scene and he goes, not in my house. And then it was followed up with, you know, and that's why I'm gay. You know what I mean? That was like a very powerful moment in that show that in America, to see that come out of the mouths of a black man is probably the most frightening thing ever. Because he not only will fight you, but he's going to go back to his boyfriend afterwards, which is even more frightening for some people. And then... And then I just thought about it. How about that scene with Louis Gossett Jr. when they were at the big shootout finale? And that man turned around and said what he said to him. And then Louis Gossett Jr. did exactly what he did to him. And then the scene where that woman gets her due for doing what she had done earlier in the show. And then and it comes from the hands of that white man that it was like, baby... That was too much for white America, honey. For the Trump-loving, cray-cray, why is Roseanne off the air America? That show was like, that put the end to everything. Because
you're so right. You are so right. For you folks who follow the show, you know what we're talking about. Ooh. For you folks who didn't see it, you need to find it and binge watch it.
Because let me tell you something. That movie, if I were white people, I'd be calling the police on black folks for show after that episode. Come on now, Bobby. Talk to me.
They're barbecuing at Clark.
Mr. Lansdale, you know we're telling the truth now, aren't we?
We mentioned this in a previous podcast, but novelist Joe Lansdale gave us these characters. Now, these characters were set in 1980, but this gay man... felt more relevant to me as a character in the 1980s than, and I know it's a different kind of show in a different format, but watching the gay characters on the rebooted Will and Grace, who are of 2018.
Exactly. Exactly. And I always say this because, you know, folks will be shady. It's like, but this is coming out of the pen and the mind of a white man.
Yeah.
Telling the story and adding this character and bringing it in such a way. It's like the reason that GLAAD doesn't care anymore because it's not James Purefoy who's the gay character. Let's just both own that and we'll go on. I mean, we don't want to say it. It's all inclusive. Yes, I know, because they all love Brad Lemon.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I thought. Because I'm taking, because you and I have talked about this before, for an African-American male to play an openly gay character, That is brave, because given the history of our man.
Very brave. Very, very,
very brave.
And so,
because,
and so, also to be straight.
And this is his third time doing it.
Yes, and his he's straight. Doing it.
And he, yes, his third time doing it. But the guy from Queer, the new Queer Eye, is up there receiving an award. And, well, you know.
Well, and also to Babala, let's be honest.
And bless him. And God bless him for getting it.
But, yeah, no, because again, you know, yeah. the rule of the show for us is don't hate the player, hate the game. But right. this, but let's be honest, when you think about what I just thought, I mean, and this all came to me as we were just talking, because it's like, when you think about those, that imagery at the end of that last episode and what that meant, it's like the way that we will have to combat racism in America is literally to just take those people out. Do you know what that means? Do you understand? And having that come from the pen of a white man, do you know what that must mean to those white nationalists that are running whatever that, the, wherever the upper echelons of Beyond Sundance TV are? I will almost guarantee you they were like, what did they just do in that finale? You know? And that's their way of having their Roseanne, you know, cut off your money-making moment. Because let me tell you something. That show had the potential of, Mr. Lansdale would have been able to have had every book, because I just picked up now the next four books past the Two Bear Mambo, so I can give myself something to do this summer. And, you know, I just finished The Bad Chili. And I got to tell you, it's like, ooh, you know, because in this that Bad Chili, honey, they talking about beating up queers in that book.
Oh, Lord.
And how they're dealing with that then. And of course, the way he layers it is like, that's a part of the story too, but it's not the story. You know what I mean? It's like the other stuff that's going on.
Right.
But I was like, what? Like, where was I when these books were coming out and nobody said anything to me? And of course, why would, you know, Glad say anything to me about that book? where's the Lambda Literary Ring? Why did they not answer about that? Because he's not gay. That's probably why they won't give him the award. You see, Mr. Lancel, I got you, baby. I'm saying all the stuff they can't say to you.
They've honored Will and Grace so many times that those people keep going back. It's like, but, you know, what about these people on the fringe that deserve some recognition?
But here it is, Babala, and I'm going to tell it to you in a phrase, and then I think we should either... You got to give me a movie something, because I'm getting ready to get on the second skin tip in a minute. But
okay.
But you have to remember, it's like all of those things that we just talked about are the things that are challenging the way people have to think. Though that, you know, as crazy it sounds, that finale of season 3 of the Two Bear Mambo, baby, that says it all. And if people were watching that are afraid, that just did, all that did was add more to their fear fire. And so because those, the kinds of stuff that we are pushing to be a part of the conversation within GLAAD are the things that are actually challenging the way people are thinking. I'm sorry, as much as I love Will and Grace, sort of, kind of, you know, I would say like 3 out of all the episodes last season they got me, but the other ones were a lot of work. But as much as I love that, they don't challenge nobody. Even their Trump episode doesn't really challenge anybody. It doesn't really make people really walk away thinking they're going to have this intense discussion about anything. And unfortunately, that's what those people that are running all of these big companies, that's what they want. They don't want people to be thinking about the fact that, you know what, as a white person in America, I can stand up to racism, and it's okay because it's the right thing to do, because look at what's happened, especially in that Two Bear Mambo. What would almost happen to Leonard on the streets in that city if that scene hadn't gone the way that it had gone? I am from Texas. I remember, you know, that's the same state that they dragged that poor black man on the back of that truck.
Remember that?
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So to say that what
was
being presented,
a black man was dragged behind a pickup truck.
You know, so to see what Mr. Lansdale was presenting in that moment in that screen moment, it's like, that's not unusual. That's not an unusual thing, especially in those places in Texas, and especially during that time when there was no Instagram and there was no Facebook Live and there was no...
Do you know
how many people had suffered hands of that kind of craziness and nobody knew about it? So to me, the fear factor is what did it to them. I think that ultimately in the end, that is the true thing. It's like, because honey, I was like, I had to rewind and watch that damn finale like 3 different times, honey, because just for that scene alone, not in my house.
Oh man, that what a strong scene. Like,
and I was thinking to myself, if those other two people hadn't been in that room, he would have cold cocked her. You know what I'm saying? He would have just smacked the fuck out of her. And so it's that level of imagery I think that people are afraid of. But again, you know, the reason that GLAAD and all of them don't do it is because it will force people to challenge the whole conversation. Like, you have to challenge it. It's like the fact that Leonard is allegedly Republican and has his own ideals and feels about gun control and da-da-da. Like, when you read the books, you start finding these things out. And, like,
right,
that's an unusual character to be gay for what people want gay to be and expect gay to be. And the idea is that we need to represent the fact that we can be different, but just because we're different doesn't mean that we're impactful. It certainly makes us become more reflective, don't you think? Like,
right,
when you see the stupid, bad acting gay guy, that's the last person that you want to be. So why isn't that just as important as the guy who's designing your fabulous living room? Right?
Right.
You know.
Man, there you go.
See, they just make me mad. Just get mad all over. Y'all better find some Netflix. You better get on it. You want people? You better get on it.
Let me give you some movie talk to calm you down. A couple of movies.
Bring me down, Bobby. Bring me down.
Let's talk about images of strong women in film. But I got 2 movies that I want you to consider the images. All right. Now, if I had a revival theater in New York City, I would have a double bill of The Post, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, directed by Steven Spielberg, and All the President's Men, Dustin Hoffman, Robert Redford, directed by Alan J. Pakula. And I would run All the President's Men first, because that story happened, and then The Post story happened after the story that you see in All the President's Men.
And how it all went down.
Right. When I was in college, All the President's Men was a big hit. And kids in the dorm, I was in the dorms, and you know, dorm mates, you know, guys in my dorm, the women in the women's dorms, they were going to see that movie more than once. That's where we were. The Post, it had to compete with caped characters flying through space.
Right.
So it didn't make the money that All the President's Men did, but it's still worth a look. Now, Meryl Streep plays Katharine Graham in The Post. She's the first woman publisher of a major U.S. news, The Washington Post. But The Post at that time is behind The New York Times. The Times broke the story about the Pentagon Papers, basically shady business going on at the White House with President Nixon, while The Post was doing like celebrity weddings. So Katharine, who was also called Kay, inherited the job, and she likes it, but she really has not found her voice in the job. Ben Bradley, the powerful editor, who's played by Tom Hanks, wants the paper to catch up and top the New York Times on the Pentagon story. So as they dig in, as he and Kay dig into the story, it becomes more obvious that Nixon is truly corrupt, and Kay and Ben are threatened with prison, basically, if they keep doing their jobs as journalists. So, Kay, as she gets closer to the fire of Nixon's heat, finds her voice as the publisher. She develops a set of brass ovaries, and she will tell us, quote, "News is the first rough draft of history." Now, this is a good, tense newspaper thriller, and it's all true. These events happen in our American history. So The Post is, in a few ways, similar to a movie from the 90s that I watched a couple of nights ago and went, oh man, this is something. The movie is The Silence of the Lambs. Director Jonathan Demme won Oscars for Best Picture in 1991, Best Actress Jodie Foster, Best Actor Anthony Hopkins, and Best Director. So think about this. Now you got Jodie Foster is Agent Clarice Starling. And when we meet her, she is in a male-dominated FBI training program. She's not yet an agent. She's an excellent cadet, probably the best one in her league. And she's constantly surrounded by males in the office, in the elevator, walking down prison road to meet Hannibal Lecter. All the convicts are men. You know, and just like Kay Graham is, they're like the only women sometimes in an all-male work situation. And we see her sometimes the only woman in the room, and the men do not listen to her. I'm talking about Clarice now. And they do the same thing to Kay. They talk at her or around her, but they really do not listen to her and consider her opinion. Now, Tom Hanks, as Ben Bradley, is to Kay Graham in The Post what Dr. Lecter is to Clarice in Silence of the Lambs. And here's my theory. Both men respect the women. They see her intelligence. They see that she's a gender outsider. And they push her to take her power up a notch and uncover the crime. Take on the monster in the house that is breaking the law, whether it's a creepy house with a woman held hostage in a well, or the White House where the Constitution is being abused. So notice those similarities. Women finding their power in a male-dominated workplace in Silence of the Lambs and in The Post. Two fine films, two female leads, women establishing their vital power within the boys' club and finding their voice. You know, we got to get out of here because I talked too long. And I'm sorry.
That's all right. But they can find out more about Mocha if they go to mocha.podomatic.com. That's where they can find us. They can find you on iTunes. They can find you on Stitcher. And they can also, if they have questions for you, Bobola, because, I mean, these references are perfect, to Mocha, M-O-C-H-A-A, with bobbyrivers@gmail.com.
Right, okay, so keep us in mind. Listen to us and call us for auditions.